Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to call this meeting of the Climate and Energy meeting to order, or Climate and Energy Committee to order. First order of business is approving the minutes for March 27th. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to look over the meeting minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have. I move their approval.
Great. All those in favor say aye, or any discussion first. Discussion to the meeting minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the meeting minutes are adopted. We've got two bills on our agenda today. The first is House File 5171 with Representative Carroll. As he makes his way to the desk, I'll move House File 5171 be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Carroll has an author's amendment coded the A1. So Representative Carroll moves the A1 to get the bill in the shape he would like. Any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. With that, Representative Carroll, can you tell us about House File 5171?
I sure can. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Thank you, members. House File 5171, as amended, is a common sense bill to help local permitting authorities, such as cities or counties, implement Solar App. It's an automated solar permitting software developed by the National Renewable Energy Lab that enables quicker approval for residential rooftop solar and solar plus storage systems. Currently, solar permitting processes are often inefficient, can increase soft costs by upwards of thousands of dollars for Minnesotans, increase the number of applicants who drop out of solar projects prior to installation, and deter would-be solar users from engaging in a drawn-out process to get a residential solar system. For context, our best-performing cities in Minnesota take, on average, 3 days to issue a building permit. Some jurisdictions take up to 6 weeks. Solar App makes much more efficient by allowing an applicant to apply and immediately determine if their proposed system is code compliant. Automated permitting also helps local governments and their staff by easing permitting application volumes, as these systems allow for solar permits to be managed automatically. The goal of the bill is to provide grants ranging from $5,000 to $20,000 to governments. More than anything, H.F. 5171 will help build more solar faster, will advance Minnesota's path to 100% carbon-free energy by 2040, a standard we must meet quickly. With that, Madam Chair, I have two testifiers who can speak to the Solar App.
Great. Looks like Ben Davis. Please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, and go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ben Davis. I'm the Chief of Policy for Permit Power. We are a nonprofit whose mission is to automate the permitting for every piece of equipment a home needs to go 100% clean energy. And previously, I was an advisor to the Department of Energy on the development of Solar App. This bill is about rapidly increasing the number of homes in Minnesota that have rooftop solar. Today, solar is booming across Europe, and in Germany specifically, 1 in 5 homes have solar, which is much higher than here. And we have similar hardware and labor costs as Germany, and Minnesota has much more sun. But what's different is that Germany, and much the rest of Europe, has completely cut the red tape. Permitting for residential solar in Germany is completely automated, and it's completely standardized. The reason HF 5171 will have an impact is that it incentivizes jurisdictions to automate their residential solar permitting too by adopting the Federal Department of Energy's Solar App. Automated permitting eliminates project delays and significantly reduces project costs because solar installers can take all the staff time previously dedicated to securing permits and devote that to actually installing solar. A highly innovative and effective way to reduce the cost of solar and spur solar growth across Minnesota is to automate residential solar permitting, which would be accomplished by this bill. Thank you so much. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. And we do have one other testifier, Bobby King with Solar United Neighbors. Welcome to committee. Welcome back to committee, Mr. King. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Akam and committee, my name is Bobby King. I'm the Minnesota State Director for Solar United Neighbors. We're a national nonprofit that helps people go solar through coordinating a group buy in communities and doing solar education. Around the country, we've helped over 8,000 folks go solar, about 300 here in Minnesota. And in Minnesota, when we do these group buys, we always have a path for low-income homeowners to go solar. And currently, because of the legislators' work last year in increasing the solar rewards funds and dedicating half of that to low-income folks, we hope this year to do as many as we've done in the past 3 years. So currently have 20 low-income folks we're working with to help them take advantage of that program. But at the federal level, you know, we've made a decision that we're going to have some powerful incentives to help folks go solar, because we need the renewable energy, and produces energy savings for folks. So we've got a federal tax incentive of 30%. The USDA has a REAP program that will pay half the cost of solar for farm and rural small businesses. And really the two biggest barriers we see to folks taking advantage of these incentives and keeping this money here in Minnesota or bringing it to Minnesota is interconnection, which I know there's a bill tomorrow you're dealing with, and the upfront costs of doing solar. And Solar App is an opportunity for Minnesota to reduce the upfront costs by removing the amount of time installers have to spend on managing paperwork and getting the appropriate permits. And for me, one of the important things about Solar App, it's designed to work with local jurisdictions. It doesn't step on or in any way disrespect local control, but it's a way to get things online and to automate a lot of the process. So having Minnesota Commerce have a small grant program to incentivize cities to take a look at this and absorb some of the costs of implementing it, we think it's a smart decision, and thank you for the bill, and we hope to see it pass. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or though the details of Solar App are better answered by the previous testifier.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else here today that wanted to testify on this bill?
Chair, I just did want to say, actually, permitting and solar apps are not always issues that engage citizenry that much, but we have folks that came just to support the solar app bill here in the audience today. So
that's great.
It's great to see. So thank you.
Thanks for coming, everybody. As I'm looking around, are there any questions from members? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was looking forward to hearing from Ben Davis testifying on this, but apparently it's a different Ben Davis.
A different Ben Davis. Yeah. We have two Eric Andersons, two Ben Davises.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Carroll, first of all, your underlying bill, I think it's always a good idea to be taking a look at inefficiencies in our system and how we can be delivering things more effectively and prudently. But just as a general policy sense, I am continue to be bewildered why so many people want to incentivize one of the most expensive forms of renewable energy generation in terms of rooftop solar compared to other forms of renewable. I'm continuing to be challenged to understand why jurisdictions that have gone down this path, specifically Germany and the state of California, have ended up with very bad results, both environmentally and cost-wise. So why is it that we want to aggressively and promote rooftop solar when there are so many other ways to create clean energy that are much more affordable?
Before I pass it over to Representative Carroll or any of his testifiers, I am just going to say, as we are looking to reach our 100% goals, it's going to take all forms of rooftop, distributed, and utility scale solar to reach those goals. And so I certainly appreciate the comments, but I think that we know we need to be moving in all the directions in order to achieve those goals.
Well, Madam Chair, that's my question is, like, why? Why do we, I understand that we have a law that says we got to get to 100%, I get that, but why is it that we have to also pursue within this subset some of the most expensive forms of generation? What justifies this dramatically higher cost structure of putting a separate inverter in every single person's house, of drilling holes in people's roofs, versus if we just had other forms of clean energy that will produce way more energy and are far more cost effective? What is it that says, in your words, that we have to do that we have to put this generation on top of people's houses?
I think what we're doing is providing options and choices, and no one is telling any homeowner or building owner that they need to put this on their roof. But I think having options and choices available is going to help us achieve our goals, rather than just putting all of our eggs in one basket if we are looking at achieving those goals in different ways, and have giving people the choice to make those right decisions for them. I think that'll help us get us to those goals.
But I mean, so that was my question to the author is because maybe perhaps you misspoke in your original comments when you said that we have to do this in order to get to 100%. Maybe that was just a verbal semantics. But to the author of the bill, but I continue to be amazed that we are seeing all these efforts at promoting a form of generation that has been disproven in Germany. It's been disproven in California. It's created energy grid nightmares in both those jurisdictions despite huge costs. The amount of energy produced is very low, particularly in a climate like Minnesota, where I don't think there's a dispute that we are, the farther you are from the equator, the less potential solar energy there is. And compared to other forms of clean or renewable energy, you can get far more energy at a much lower price. So again, your underlying bill, I have no objections to, but I just continue to be fascinated by people who are promoting this, and I'm trying to find out what public policy benefit we get out of producing really expensive clean energy when we could get much cheaper clean energy.
Well, you've made it.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Groff, you made a conclusion, and it's one I may or may not agree with. I probably don't agree with it. But in terms of the response, the Chair addressed your concerns, and I'd see if my testifier has anything else to add to it.
Mr. King, or excuse me, Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Member. I'm not going to, the energy makeup that Minnesota's goals and how to get there, I'm going to leave to people in this room who know more than I do. I can say that in terms of solar app and what this bill would do, for a relatively small investment, there will be a significant impact. We're talking about here the sizes of the incentives to jurisdictions are between $5,000 and $20,000. And for that, if a jurisdiction automates their solar permitting with solar app, can reduce the cost of solar, the price tag of solar by thousands of dollars. And to me, that just seems like an incredibly good bang for the buck and an investment that the state can make.
Representative Grothlow, did you have any other questions?
I guess I would like someone to answer my question, whether it's the testifier or the two members, that, again, I don't think there's much of a dispute that when you require a separate inverter at every house for this generation, when you're affixing infrastructure to the roof of someone's house, the capacity factors are going to be lower, the costs are going to be higher. And again, Representative Carroll, I have no problem with your underlying bill. I think Mr. Davis's testimony is correct, that it will, in fact, make that form of generation less expensive. It's still going to be outrageously expensive when compared to other forms of renewable generation. And I have yet to hear anyone make an articulate case about why we continue to incentivize and encourage that. Again, your underlying bill will make things less expensive. I'm fine with that. But it'd be nice if we could have just someone articulate why we're spending more money when we could spend less.
Well, maybe what I will say in my personal experience having panels on my roof and the cost that it's saving me as a homeowner and the ability to charge my car and store power in the batteries that we have in our home, it gives us huge cost savings that will be recovered for that initial investment in quite short order. So we're not asking the state to put panels on people's roofs. We paid for those panels ourselves. There were incentives, but it's certainly saving my family a significant amount of money every year and will pay for themselves in less than 10 years.
And Madam Chair, I think you highlight a different language we're speaking here. Two different words, cost and price. Those are two entirely different terms. And there is no doubt that the price in your situation that you are paying for energy is saving you a lot of money. There's no doubt about that. In fact, I think a lot of us could be convinced to save money at that perspective. However, the cost is different. That savings that you're experiencing in price, it is incentivized through subsidies at the federal level, at the state level, through solar rewards. And all that money, if that was being put into a more efficient delivery, again, if you just use renewables, you get much more renewable energy at a much lower price. I don't dispute that for you, you would have that. But in that situation, it's important to understand the difference between cost and price. But if what I'm saying is wrong, maybe rooftop solar is cheaper than all these other forms of renewable generation, please, someone make the case to me. Explain to me why California is such a disaster with their rooftop solar. Someone explain to me the feed-in tariff system of Germany and how it's not a disaster and things have been great. Let's have the debate, but I just want to know what the other side of this argument is. Anyone?
Well, I made my argument for myself, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Ruffalo, I'm not prepared to go into the nitty-gritties of this kind of debate with you, but I will say I don't think it's as clear-cut as you talk about. With utility-scale solar, you have big transmission challenges that we've talked about. There also are, and we're hearing that we have trouble in terms of building out that transmission fast enough. So having more distributed solar in many places has some benefits. The other benefits that it can have is more of a resilient grid, because when you have things distributed in more fashions in more places, that if there's a devastating storm that hits, you have more resiliency built into your grid. So I think there's multiple things here than just a straight how much does it cost to generate a large amount at array versus a smaller amount, which you're right. At that level, it certainly is more cost effective. But there's many other things in here that I think we would need to consider in a debate like this. And I wasn't ready. I don't think Representative Carroll was ready for this debate now, but I'm happy to have this at a later date.
Any other comments by members or questions? Representative Garofalo, did
Thank you
have
Madam
any follow-up?
In closing, all I heard Representative Kraft say is I was right. That's all I heard.
Do we call that selective hearing? not seeing any other comments or questions from members. Oh, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. And just a quick question to the author. Just looking at your bill, RDA funds that you're looking to use, those are developed and curated from ratepayers from Xcel territory. Does this program limit access to these funds for cities that are located within Xcel Center or Xcel distribution?
Madam Chair.
Representative Carroll.
Did you say limit to?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it does.
It does. Okay. So it looks like he's got it.
Mr. Davis, did you?
Madam Chair, if I may, I believe beneath that line, there's appropriation language from the general fund, which could be used for outside Xcel territory. There's a blank for the dollar figure there, so it's a possibility.
All right, thank you. And then just on a second, you know, do you have an estimate that if you were to deploy this, we were told that it's a very small cost to this program. If we were to deploy this statewide to each municipality, what the total cost would be, or if the state would be on the hook for, you know, if we funded every single city that wanted to put in this solar app, what that would, the potential cost would be to the state or to ratepayers?
Madam Chair.
Representative Carroll.
That figure is being worked on, but I appreciate the question.
Okay, sounds good. And then third, just to Representative Kraft replied to Representative Garofalo, you know, we look at, you know, one of the arguments against this or for this was the idea that distributed generation, and this gets rid of the need to have large transmission lines running across rural Minnesota. You know, that is a real big concern. And I think, you know, one of the issues that we do see, this doesn't work either. You look at the city of Northfield, we had a big bill to move millions of dollars of ratepayer money to beef up the transmission and the areas so that folks could still put in rooftop solar on their properties that didn't have room in the line. And so I think it was a tune of like $80,000 or $50,000 per home that was going to be affected. So we're still force feeding this into the system where even on a very distributed system, it doesn't work and there's no room for it. The state's still coming in with ratepayer money to do it. And I think to Pat's point, he makes a lot of sense that, you know, if your goal is to be carbon free and you actually believe that this country has limited resources, which it does, and ratepayers have limited resources, you know, if you go to the gas pump, if you go to different bills that people are paying, they have, you know, limited resources. And the idea that you're going to blow money on inefficient renewable resources when you could potentially just focus them on wind, which everyone believes there's a lot of hot air that comes out of this room at times. But, you know, you look at it from a bang for the buck, like there's zero sense in putting money into solar when it comes to efficiencies, as Pat talked about, the closer you are to the equator. I mean, they're talking in California and Nevada limiting solar installations on desert to protect desert. And we're putting it in the most productive farmland here in Minnesota. Ridiculous. We should be incentivizing building solar on deserts where the land literally is producing zilch to protect the turtle. Come on. Like, I think we can do better than this. I mean, I appreciate the idea. I think it makes some sense that we try to get rid of red tape when it comes to doing anything, preferably mining as well. But, you know, I think that's the point that we're trying to make, is saying, you know, if this is a goal that's legitimate, if you really believe we can get there, you know, this goal is not going to be reached by government subsidies at the federal, state, local, and ratepayer incentives for rooftop solar. If you're going to get someplace close to it, we should do what we do best. We should, in southwest Minnesota, we do blow wind. And we can do that anywhere across the state. That's the most efficient, cost-effective, least impact on the land, and build it right next to the 494. I think that will solve a lot of the issues that people are dealing with when it comes to transmission lines. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Before I turn it over to Representative Meckland, I just want to maybe comment on a couple of things that Representative Susinski said. And when we look at all of the solar that's on prime farmland, it is less than a half a percentage of all of it. And so while I understand there are concerns, this is a very small piece of the solar capacity that we have. And as far as Northfield, the capacity constraints come from the colleges gobbling up all of the interconnection issues. And so while there are areas that are congested, I think there's strategies that we can do to alleviate that. And we have an interconnection bill tomorrow that you're going to really enjoy. So, Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for, I think, probably Mr. Davis. When you go apply for one of these permits now, can you explain to me, like, who you're applying to and, like, who's approving it and what the process typically is?
Mr. Davis.
Madam Chair, thank you, member. Are you asking about a permit applied for via solar app or the conventional non-solar app process?
Representative Meckland.
You're talking about some kind of software that would expedite the process of approving a rooftop solar project is what my understanding is thus far. So when you go to a local government, you want to get a permit to put solar on a residential dwelling, what department are you going to?
Mr. Davis.
Madam Chair, member, you are going to the local building department.
So,
Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, are you planning on sending this bill to labor, to where the Department of Labor would weigh in on this, as far as, because I would think it would have to be approved. I pull permits all the time. So I would think that it would have to have some input from the Department of Labor as to how they would administer this to the local municipality and how it could all be approved.
Yeah. Mr. Davis.
Madam Chair, member. So the Department of Labor conducts the inspection for the electrical should preface all this with saying, I know many things about Solar App. I'm less knowledgeable about the specific permitting processes in Minnesota. We have folks in the room who can speak to that. But my understanding is that the Department of Labor conducts the electrical inspection. So there are two jurisdictions in Minnesota that are currently onboarding with Solar App, and they're working in partnership with the Department of Labor on how that integration would work.
And I think ultimately this bill is working with local governments and not necessarily labor, but I think given the response.
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Mecklen? Or
Madam,
Representative
Madam
Carroll?
Chair, that's correct. So, Representative Mecklen, it's through the local permitting authority, which is defined in the bill. So it's that whatever the department is in the local unit of government that deals with permitting.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that, but what the local governing body, the building official, that's all comes from the Department of Labor, and as well as the building inspectors that go out and inspect to make sure the wires were put on right, the mounts were put into the roof system right. All of that is all direction that comes from the Department of Labor, not to mention there are also now integrated building materials that produce solar. So it is literally a solar panel that's embedded into a shingle, which requires both, not only a licensed roofer, but also a licensed electrician to be on that particular job site simultaneously. My question to you is this, have you discussed this with the Department of Labor, or do they have any input? Because it's going to have to integrate within that, I would think, within that system, and I'm curious if it's going to be making its way to the Labor Committee.
And I think good question about going to the Labor Committee, and I will address that in a second. But as far as the permit, it's just the application to be able to get access, to have the authority to put it on your roof. There will be an inspection that comes through at the end. Representative Mecklen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Humbly, I'm going to disagree with you. I go apply for permits all the time. I pull permits all the time. Yes, at the end, I call. I said my job is done, or midway if they want intermittent inspections, and then we close them out. I would personally love to see an app so I didn't have to drive down there for every darn roofing permit and siding permit, to be honest with you. And I would like to see flat fees, too, because there's no sense why one city can sell them for a flat fee and others will charge you $2,000 when it's actually our insurance that are paying all these fees. But that my question is simply, I think that I understand where the money's coming from, thus by it would be an energy, it's dealing with solar. However, this does integrate into, and if you recall last year, it was passed that now rooftop solar installers must be licensed by the Department of Labor, so it's even more tied together. But that's all I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mecklen. Last on the list, we have Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of want to follow up. So if this goes into place, are we expecting a demand to increase more for this rooftop solar?
Representative Carroll.
Hopefully.
Representative Igo.
Thank you. So with that demand, one of the concerns I have right away is that we don't necessarily have the supply of solar panels needed to do this, so we're going to increase costs even more unless people are trying to get them. Obviously, right now, we get 96% of our solar panels from overseas. So are you factoring in the carbon cost that's going to take to get those things from overseas because we can't make them here?
Representative Carroll.
I personally am not, but I appreciate your thoughts and your consideration about that, and we'll keep it in mind.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the reason I bring that up is because the conversation that was had earlier about, you know, we're trying to hit 2040 clean energy goals, zero emissions, we're trying to get there. We need to remember that if we're increasing the demand by legislation like this and getting that supply from somewhere else that doesn't have the same standards as us, it's in itself greenwashing. We're taking the Atticus out and we're sliding it to somewhere else where we're not seeing it. And I think it's really important when we talk about if we're going to try and get there, we need to do exactly what Representative Garofalo is saying by making sure we're looking at this from a wide lens. I'll make my mining plug like I have many times in this committee. If we want to have solar be really affordable here and for people to have the attainability to be putting it on their houses, that means we need to mine and manufacture it here in Minnesota or somewhere else in this country. We cannot be beholden to the Chinese who have a 96% market share on solar energy. Because otherwise we'll pass legislation like this, it'll increase the demand, which is going to increase the cost, which will increase production in China, which will increase carbon emissions, and we're not actually going to solve the problem that the 2040 bill was trying to solve. These are really important discussions to have, and we can't just blot them out because it's thousands of miles away. So I wanted to make that point today. I see what your bill is trying to accomplish, but for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And I don't want that the reaction to be by farming jobs and production outside of the United States. Thank you.
Any closing remarks on the bill, Representative Carroll?
No, I just appreciate your support. Thank you.
Representative Carroll renews his motion that House File 5171 be laid over. The bill is laid over. Next on our agenda today, we have House File 4242 with Representative Kraft. Welcome to committee, Representative. Do you want to go ahead and move your bill?
Sure. I would move that House File 4242 be laid over for possible inclusion.
And as I understand, you have an author's amendment.
Yes, I will move the A7 to get the bill in the shape I would like it.
Any discussion on the A7? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Kraft, would you like to tell us about your bill?
I would. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. So I'm excited to share this important bill. Buildings are responsible for about 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota, and residential buildings generate just over half that amount. This bill is about addressing new homes by accelerating efficiency improvements in our state's residential energy code in a responsible way. The energy code is our tool to make sure that when new housing gets built, it is built right to maintain comfort, health, safety, and minimize energy waste. House File 4242 sets us on a path so that new homes achieve a 70% reduction in energy use by 2038 as compared to the 2006 code. It doesn't require one fuel type versus another, one insulation product versus another. It sets an energy savings target for the experts who update our building codes led by the Department of Labor and Industry. The 70% figure was arrived at after modeling work done by experts at the Center for Sustainable Building Research at the University of Minnesota to determine the limits of reasonable energy efficiency. By the way, I have a real life example that I'll talk about later that backs up this number. We already have this for commercial buildings. Last year, thank you all, we passed a very similar language that puts commercial buildings on a path to 80% energy savings by 2036. Another exciting part of this bill is a new rebate program for the highest performing new homes, those that are built to a net zero ready standard. So here is where I want to digress a little bit and tell a story of some homes that we visited in Northfield over the summer. Hillcrest Village, 17-unit affordable housing development of duplexes and townhomes. These homes are net zero today. And in speaking with one of the builders, they cost 7 to 8% more than code today. And they achieve a 62% energy reduction as compared to current code. So that's my, that's current code, and we're doing 70% versus 2006. So we know this is achievable. The really exciting thing about these homes is that their per year heat and electricity costs are $240 per year, okay? So I think we want to encourage this kind of development, not just for climate, but for affordability and health of homes. So zero energy ready homes is a certification from the US Department of Energy and qualifies builders for a $5,000 federal tax credit as part of the IRA. But certification requires professional energy raters, which are more concentrated in metro areas right now. So the rebate program reimburses energy rating services, including travel costs, for zero energy ready homes. So with that, we're advancing the housing industry in multiple ways. We're going to make this zero energy ready available throughout Minnesota. We're more than doubling the money we're investing by supporting certification of new zero energy ready homes that unlocks that $5,000 IRA federal tax credit. And we're rewarding builders and developers who strive for the most energy efficient homes. With that, I have testifier.
Great. Welcome to committee, Mr. Fowler with Fresh Energy. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Acom and members of the committee. My name is Eric Fowler. I use he, him, his pronouns, and I'm a senior policy associate on the buildings team at Fresh Energy. We're a nonpartisan Minnesota-based energy policy nonprofit dedicated to advancing equitable carbon neutral economies. And I am grateful to be testifying today in support of HF 4242 because we need homes that sip energy rather than guzzling it, and we need to build them right away that way from the start. So most of our energy that we use to heat and cool our homes goes to waste. It leaks out the roof, it goes through windows or around an unsealed vent, and this isn't just wasted energy or just wasted emissions, it's also wasted money. We can build, as we've just heard an example, we can build high-performing buildings already today that cut energy use by 60, 70, in some cases 80%, with the techniques and products that are available already now. So this bill supports better home building across the state without prescribing one product or fuel. It gives the Department of Labor and Industry a specific achievable goal. And it does this, I'll add a little context about the International Energy Conservation Code. It does this using the IECC, which is the model code that the department essentially uses as a first draft. Our current code is already an amended version of the 2012 IECC. The Department of Labor and Industry is currently preparing the next version of the code based on the 2021 and 2024 IECC. So we're just codifying by referencing that what is already the norm. So that next code update is actually already going to bring us 30% of the 30% energy savings above the 2006 baseline, which means that we are already well on our way. This is not 70% savings from now. This is 70% savings from 2006. And then on that second part, the second part of the bill, by offering reimbursement for energy rating services, we are also supporting a growing workforce of energy raters who play a critical role in verifying building quality and educating and working with builders on cost-effective energy conservation. How we survive and thrive in a changing climate starts at home with our homes. We have already guaranteed this quality and savings for commercial buildings, and I hope that you will vote yes to give the same quality guarantee to everyone in Minnesota's residential buildings as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fowler. And it looks like we have one person signed up from the public for testimony, Nick Erickson with Housing First Minnesota. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Aiko. My name is Nick Erickson. I'm Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. Our members build the communities and places that we all call home. And Housing First Minnesota operates the state's largest energy efficient new construction program, Minnesota's Green Path. Our comments are rooted in the scope of Minnesota's housing crisis, where today it costs more to build a home here in Minnesota than it does anywhere else in the region. Thanks to the consistency in our energy codes over the last several years, Minnesota has continuously been rated as the most energy efficient, medium to high production state in the nation. And this is because of the quality of our code officials, home builders, and their trade partners. I do want to thank Representative Kraft for listening to stakeholder input and offering amendments as this bill has progressed forward. We appreciate a lot of the amendments that have been made. However, we still have concerns about this bill because our building codes do require a durability analysis to be done. We just want to ensure that the durability analysis that is done to protect the home occupants and the structure of the home does still have some type of balance to ensure that if there needs to be some type of change made because of the efficiency targets required that we do not move beyond the durability analysis, because that is both a health and safety issue for occupant health, but also for structural durability, as well as our state building code does have a balance of safety, durability, and affordability, and we want to make sure that that is retained here. I do want to end with that our new homes are not the cause of the climate crisis. They are the solution. Today, our increasing energy efficiency on new homes does not change the fact that the older housing stock, which does make up the majority of our housing stock, is where the greatest energy efficiency problems are. So, again, I want to thank Representative Kraft. He has been great to work with on this bill. We appreciate all of his efforts he does put into helping Minnesota address its housing crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. And before we turn to members for discussion, I just do want to point out that this bill did come from labor, and so the first section one of the bill was addressed there, and really what we're talking about today is section two of the bill starting on page three. And thank you. Line 316, according to Representative Mecklen. Thank you for that. With that, are there any members' questions or comments? I just, as members are thinking, I want to thank Representative Kraft for bringing up the Northfield example. I just think that that's such a powerful example. And after touring there, it's stuck with me since then in seeing the possibility without much higher cost and the savings to the person who's living there is immense, not to mention the public health impacts from having not using fossil fuels as well, and really good air quality within those very durable homes. But with that, are there any questions or comments from members? Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. Just to quote a few numbers here for the housing, you know, because we hear quite a bit about there's housing shortage in Minnesota, and it is very, very expensive to build here in Minnesota. So just giving you a few numbers. Minnesota, this is a medium home, $523,000. Our neighboring states, Wisconsin, $403,000. North Dakota, $425,000. South Dakota, $350,000. Iowa, $370,000. So on the closest end, we're here in Minnesota, we are costing $100,000 more to build for a new homeowner. So my question to Representative Kraft is, what is the big difference in Minnesota versus all these neighboring states that we are our cost to build is so much higher?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative Altendorf. So I'll give you some thoughts, and then you might want to have Nick Erickson from Housing First up here, because I think he probably can answer some of those questions pretty well. You know, some of our, and I share your concern on the cost of housing in Minnesota. I think this bill aims to, the cost of housing is also a total cost. It's your upfront and then how much you pay on an ongoing basis. So what we're aiming to do with this bill is in a responsible way map out a path to increasing efficiency that lowers the ongoing cost in a way that doesn't significantly increase, or I think if you do this in the right way and you can, the industry optimizes about what we're going to build, that it doesn't need to increase costs. In terms of you know, why does it cost so much in Minnesota to build homes? Some of it has to do with local regulations. Some of it has to do with workforce. There's a variety of things, but I'll let Mr. Erickson speak to that.
Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, there's a lot of reasons that we'd like to say at Housing First, there's about three dozen. And I'd say, you know, energy code is one of them. We last did an analysis about 2019. There's about a $3,000 cost difference on energy codes between Minnesota and Wisconsin. But if you look broadly, the land use portion is immense. You know, Representative Kraft is working on zoning reform, and I think that is probably the largest single bucket where we could find cost savings. You know, cities mandating luxury materials, focusing on large garages, large lots, that is where a massive amount of cost savings could be found.
Representative Altendorf, did you have any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, you know, just, you know, to be noted, you know, here in Minnesota, it's no secret. I mean, everything is mandate, big government, not giving local control. And this is what's cost, you know, pushing up. So it's like, this is definitely one of those, we have caused the problem in Minnesota and now we're looking to fix it. And, it's just, again, it's wasted dollars all the time. So thank you.
Did you want to respond, Representative Kraft?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Malt. So I think, as I said, I think you raised a good point. But actually what I thought I heard, and you talked about mandates and no and local control being the problem. I think what you heard from Mr. Erickson was more that local control was more of the issue. So I think there's a balance to be worked out here. Thanks.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Akam. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this bill forward. I really think that this is actually very important, and I'll tell you the reason why, because I have we all have a big district, right? But I mean, my district, it's very diverse, and it's economically very diverse. Mm-hmm. So that means that people on the wealthier side of my district are in residential homes are working hard to make their homes more efficient, and that means they get to save money on the back end by putting in extra insulation, new windows, all sorts of things that are keeping them safe, dry, and frankly spending a lot less on their energy costs. Whereas people on the lower income side of my district do not have that opportunity. And so when I think about what we are building moving forward, I think it's really important that we increase our building standards across the board, because this should not just be something that rich people who have the money up front to be able to do it should be able to do. This is something that we want everybody to benefit from, because collectively, this is collectively our problem, and that means that we all add to it, but we all can also benefit from those savings. And so when I see this, I'm thinking about the construction that's happening in my district. The new homes that are being built in my district, and making sure that those people get the same cost-saving measures that people on the wealthier side of my district do. And I think it's actually even more important as we've moved into this post-pandemic landscape where a lot of folks are working from home. And I don't know if any of you noticed that, but my husband works from home now, and our energy bills have gone up because we used to turn the heat down in the middle of the day when nobody was home, and now we have to keep it up all the time. So I really do think it's important for us to consider the residential aspects as well as the commercial aspects, because, you know, our homes are becoming more and more functional as, you know, a lot of different areas of our lives. So thank you. I really appreciate this.
Any closing remarks, Representative Kraft?
Yeah, thank you for the great discussion. This is a great bill. It sets a goal and lets the experts figure out the details of how to get us there. But we know it is doable in a cost-effective manner. It's time to raise the floor on all our homes by putting efficiency to work, saving on utility bills, keeping us comfortable, reducing peak demand, and slowing our emissions of greenhouse gases. So I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Kraft renews his motion that House File 4242 be laid over, and the bill is laid over. And with no further business, this meeting is adjourned.